the headlines. Kiev and Moscow are set to return to the negotiating table to discuss peace with President Zelensky, saying both sides are sounding more realistic. Concerns are on the rise over the financial ramifications resulting from sanctions on Russia. Just ahead, report from Brussels. And also, British-Iranian national Nazanin Zahedi Ratcliffe is leaving Tehran for the UK after serving a 5-year jail term on charges of espionage. Hello and welcome, everybody. Day 21 of the Russian military action in Ukraine, and its forces are stepping up their attacks on the capital, Kiev. Early on Wednesday, several explosions were heard in the city's west, with thick clouds of smoke billowing into the sky. Several residential buildings were damaged in an overnight bombardment. 2 people were wounded. On Tuesday, at least 4 people were killed in a Russian strike on several buildings in the city. A curfew is now in place in Kiev and is expected to last till Thursday. There are fears that a full-scale assault could come at any moment. Meantime, battles rage on in Mariupol, Kharkiv, and Mykolaiv. About 700 people have reportedly been killed in the conflict. Ukraine says more than 100 of them were children. We're now joined by our correspondent, Robert Carter, who's joining us from Warsaw. Robert, what can you tell us about the influx of these refugees into the to Poland right now? We know the large number of the people fleeing Ukraine at this point have been. We've seen a large influx into Poland. What efforts are being implemented there to accept these refugees right now?
Sure. Well, obviously, as you say, Poland has received a large number of the refugees. In fact, it's the country which has received the most so far since the situation in Ukraine has deteriorated. And with fears of more pending battles, particularly over the capital, Kiev, it's expected that new waves of refugees could flood into countries such as Poland. Currently, figures suggest that at least 1.7 million Ukrainians have fled into Poland, and most of them congregate here in the capital, Warsaw. So right behind us is the main central station. I'll step off screen and give you a chance to have a little brief look. As you can see, everyone here, the majority of whom are actually Ukrainians rather than Polish or any other nationality. And this is the main central station in the Polish capital. Many people gather here either to seek asylum in Poland, perhaps in the capital, to try and find somewhere to stay, or they board buses and trains going further westwards or going to perhaps another city elsewhere in Poland if they're lucky enough to have friends or family here. Massive aid effort, as you can see, going on. There's aid coming here from all across Europe. We just spoke to someone who said that he had driven food and aid all the way from Holland. And of course, there are many other NGOs which represent other nationalities as well here. So obviously, the humanitarian effort has been immense here in Poland. But the problem is, could there be more refugees on the way? And if so, can Poland sustain the strain on its public services, on its volunteer effort, if more people were to come?
All right, thanks a lot. Robert Carter joining us from Warsaw. Elsewhere, Russia says an agreement is within reach on some formulations for a possible truce deal, raising hopes of an end to its ongoing conflict with Ukraine. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Kiev's neutral status and security guarantees are being discussed. He says the talks are not easy, but there is some hope of reaching compromise. The Russian diplomat also pointed to Washington's decisive role in defining Ukraine's position, saying there's no sign of the U.S. being interested in resolving the conflict. Meanwhile, Ukraine, too, is sounding an optimistic note about the ongoing talks.
Everyone should work, including our representatives, our delegation for negotiations with the Russian Federation. It is difficult but important, as any war ends with an agreement. The meetings continue, and I'm informed that the positions during the negotiations already sound more realistic. But time is still needed for the decisions to be in the interests of Ukraine.
Ukraine's president says the position of the two countries in the negotiations are now more realistic than before. Volodymyr Zelensky, however, believes more time is needed for the two sides to reach a peace deal. Earlier on Tuesday, an advisor to Zelensky said the negotiation process was very difficult and slow, but a compromise was within reach. He said the fundamental contradictions remaining between Kiev and Moscow, the discussions will continue Wednesday. In recent days, officials from both sides have expressed hope that a peace agreement can be reached over the next few weeks. The Ukraine crisis has dragged on for 21 days, and forecasts say the war is going to inflict severe economic hardship on people there.
We are presenting a number of scenarios, because if the conflict is a protracted one, if it were to continue, we are going to see poverty rates escalate very significantly.
Well, according to the UN Development Program, 90% of Ukrainians could plunge into poverty if the war lingers over the next year. The organization is planning to provide cash transfers to Ukrainians so they can afford basic needs such as food. Otherwise, people will continue to flee Ukraine and the economy will probably collapse. The UNDP says an emergency cash transfer operation to Ukraine will cost $250 million per month. This would only partially cover the income losses of 2.6 million people who are expected to fail, or rather fall into poverty. Also, the International Monetary Fund has predicted that Ukraine's economy will experience a 10% contraction next year. European Union finance ministers warned sanctions being imposed on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine will severely damage the economy, the EU's economy, for an unknown period of time. Fuel and food prices are set to rise even more sharply than they already have. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
As the cost of living in the EU goes through the roof, union members held a demonstration outside a meeting of EU finance ministers in Brussels on Tuesday. They want the bloc's leaders to provide more support for EU citizens who are being hit hard by the financial ramifications resulting from the conflict in Ukraine.
And it's also why we need to say that we need to stop this war, because it's affecting our workers, and our workers have already been affected with prices because of the COVID situation, and now we have to say stop. Stop this war and stop Putin in Ukraine.
Finance ministers have signed off on the fourth package of sanctions against Russia. 600 individuals have been targeted and Russian exports too. However, there is a very negative boomerang effect for the EU itself.
We'll see overall higher inflation, pressure on energy and food prices, and market volatility. Rising energy and commodity prices, disruptions of supply chains, it all will have negative knock-off effect on consumer prices and on investment.
Russia, which is now the most sanctioned country in the world, has been removed from the so-called Most Favoured Nation clause relating to the World Trade Organization.
This major decision entitles the EU to increase customs duties at any moment on Russian products. As regards sanctions, all options remain on the table.
Finance ministers say 200 billion euro worth of loans are available to EU nations most impacted by the Ukrainian refugee crisis. Critics say if Western leaders had have shown more skill and compromise when listening to Russia's security concerns, the misery now being piled on Ukrainian citizens and the financial hardship being placed on EU citizens could have been avoided. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Nazanin Zahari Radcliffe, a British-Iranian woman who served a six-year term in Iran for her involvement in espionage activities, is leaving the country for the UK. Zahari's British passport was handed to her. In recent days, she was arrested in 2016 by Iran's intelligence authorities and subsequently prosecuted and jailed for involvement in acts of espionage. She was temporarily released in March 2020 and served the rest of her time at her parents' home, wearing an ankle tag. Happening at the same time, London has settled a long overdue debt of $530 million to Tehran. Britain owed the amount to the Islamic Republic for hundreds of military vehicles that the former Pahlavi regime had paid for up front but were never delivered. Britain had been using different pretexts, including the sanctions against Iran, to delay a debt settlement for more than four decades. Elsewhere, Iran says a good, strong, and stable deal can be finalized with support from all negotiating parties in the Vienna talks if the United States adopts a realistic approach. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, who was speaking to his Chinese counterpart over the phone, hailed Beijing's constructive role in the Vienna negotiations, that have focused on removing Iran's sanctions. He also noted that boosting relations with China is a top priority for President Ebrahim Raisi's administration. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi also reiterated Beijing's support for finalizing the Vienna talks. The conversation came a day after Amir Abdullahian paid a visit to Moscow, where he gained Russia's support for the revival of the Iran agreement.
Iran expects a good agreement to be reached in the near future in its talks on the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA. This was made by Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian at a press conference following talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. Amir Abdollahian said the delay in the negotiations could lead to the creation of good ground for resolving the remaining issues. He also said that Russia has not created any obstacles in the negotiations on the JCPOA revival, and that the Vienna talks are in no way connected with the conflict in Ukraine.
Russia does not create any obstacles to reaching agreements. There is no connection between the developments in Ukraine and the Vienna talks. And until the end of the negotiations and the achievement of a good, powerful and lasting agreement, Russia will be close to Iran and will support Iran to achieve this agreement.
Meanwhile, Sergei Lavrov said his country has received written guarantees from the United States that Western sanctions on Russia over Ukraine will not affect cooperation with Iran within the framework of the JCPOA.
We received written guarantees. They are included in the text of the agreement itself on the resumption of the JCPOA on the Iranian nuclear program. These texts provide reliable protection for all the projects and areas of activity envisaged by the JCPOA, including the direct involvement of our companies, specialists, including their cooperation on such a flagship project of our cooperation as the Bushehr nuclear power plant, in the context of all existing plans in this regard.
Lavrov also rejected claims that Russia has created an obstacle to negotiations in the Austrian capital backing the quick revival of the 2015 agreement.
There have been no exorbitant demands from our side, and there are none. All our rights within the framework of cooperation with Iran on the projects that the JCPOA provides for are reliably protected. I have heard how the Americans are trying to accuse us every day that we are slowing down this agreement. That's a lie. The agreement has not yet been finally approved in some capitals, and the Russian capital, Moscow, is not among them.
Amir Abdollahian and Lavrov also discussed other issues, including the Ukrainian conflict and regional issues such as developments in Afghanistan, Syria, and Yemen.
The foreign ministers, along with political and diplomatic issues, discussed economic affairs in order to neutralize the negative impacts and consequences of the U.S. and Western anti-Moscow sanctions through closer cooperation and rapprochement. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council says Saudi Arabia cannot be a mediator in the Yemen war. Mohammed Ali al-Houthi says Riyadh cannot be impartial, as it is a perpetrator of war on Yemen. The top official was responding to a Reuters report of an initiative to hold talks between Yemeni factions and the Saudi capital Riyadh this month. The Saudi-based regional Arab bloc, GCC, is considering inviting the Ansarullah movement and other Yemeni parties for consultations in a UN-led peace effort. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, a majority of them civilians, have been killed and millions more displaced in the incessant Saudi bombing campaign and blockade on Yemen. The UK is hosting what campaigners call a shadowy arms fair to help weapons companies sell their deadly wares to stop people crossing borders and other equipment used for mass surveillance. Saeed Puruza has been to a protest, one of several, to be held during the three-day arms fair, and sent us this report.
A candlelight vigil in the heart of London to shed light on something that affects us all.
So many countries are too well armed with too much weaponry, and that only encourages them to start a dispute instead of talking and discussing and negotiating.
Organized by the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, Palestine Action, and the Joint Council for the Welfare of Immigrants, it's a call on the UK's Interior Ministry, the Home Office, to stop its secretive annual event known as Security and Policing, held only an hour's drive from the British Houses of Parliament.
These protesters tell us they have gathered here this evening to shed light on how the UK government is benefiting from the sales of arms, surveillance and other such equipment to some of the world's most repressive regimes.
Up to 70 countries are invited, among them the UAE and Saudi Arabia. They're envoys rubbing shoulders with UK officials at the exhibition, now in its 40th year.
And they will use the equipment that will be sold at this fair to continue to oppress their people. And this is even more shocking after 81 people executed in Saudi Arabia a couple of days ago. So this is a country that the UK regards as an ally.
The key focus of the fair this year, border control and surveillance. The products on sale designed to harass refugees and immigrants, many of them fleeing conflict.
Selling weapons to countries in conflict, to use weapons for oppression, displaces people, and then militarizing borders prevents people from fleeing. So it's a vicious cycle.
And there is no shortage of companies selling their tools of repression. One is the Israeli regime's NSO group, the creator of the notorious Pegasus spyware. Another is the UK's BAE Systems, that's made some £20 billion in weapons sales to Saudi Arabia since the start of the kingdom's devastating war on Yemen in 2015. The arms fair will soon end, but not the arms trade. And the protesters here say neither will their campaign, until the UK bids farewell to the arms trade. Saeed Purizam, London.
South Korea says its northern neighbor has fired an unknown projectile that appeared to fail immediately after launch. Seoul says the suspected missile was fired from an airfield outside the North Korean capital of Pyongyang. That's after Japanese media reported a suspected ballistic missile launch by the North. Pyongyang has launched several missiles this year. South Korea and the U.S. say some of them were tests of a new intercontinental ballistic missile system. North Korea says those tests were for developing the components of a reconnaissance satellite. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though.
Bye.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bazaar. Everyone knows technological innovation is reshaping the world faster than ever before. From the smartphone revolution to self-driven cars, technology has had an impact on our lives in almost every way. On a broader scale, technology has changed major sectors over the past 20 years, including healthcare, telecommunication, energy, and so much more. And knowledge-based products in particular have increased safety, speed, and efficiency in manufacturing sectors. In many ways, technology has the power to do many things, and changing the world is one of them. Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this show, we will take a look at how technology is developing Iranian industries. We wanted to uncover how indigenizing its products has contributed to industrial expansion, particularly helping oil and gas industry thrive. Plus, we will talk about what the government is doing to support the development of high tech used in industries. So let's go check it out. We made a stop at Ara Tajhiz System Consulting Engineers in the capital city of Tehran. This company has been around for years and makes a range of electronics and devices that deal with electricity. Among its products, this company makes air conditioners and purification systems in a variety of styles. But that's not all. This company is mostly known for its production of UPS systems, industrial and non-industrial chargers and inverters. Now, you might be wondering what a UPS system is and what it does. These are devices used when the electricity goes out. Broadly speaking, a UPS uses a battery to create an uninterruptible power supply to whatever electronics need it. For example, think of your laptop. UPS acts a lot like your laptop battery when the power cord is disconnected. This allows a stream of power for a certain amount of time until the power source can be reconnected again. So you can save your work when the power goes out or until the generator kicks in. Most large and small businesses use UPS systems. This is because, in addition to offering a plan B during power outages, they are designed to be smart enough to regulate power surges, sags, line noise, and whatever else disrupts electricity. There are other types of UPSs too, and some of them can protect devices. Urban electricity is not always consistently supplied. This means the city's electricity may carry a lot of noise and fluctuations. So for those who live in areas with multiple power outages and possess expensive electronic equipment, this type of UPS helps protect them from irreversible damages. But it's not just home appliances or office equipment that benefit from these items. Large establishments such as hospitals are required to have these systems too. UPS devices are vital in clinics and healthcare facilities as power outages can be fatal. Typically, they are equipped with several UPS systems that are used in surgery theaters, imaging departments, intensive care units, and so much more. This company has supplied UPS systems and inverters to dozens of hospitals in the capital as well as numerous other hospitals across the country. It has two manufacturing facilities located in industrial towns. One of its production units has an area of 3,000 square meters with a massive warehouse to store its products. Quality is paramount here. And this company prides itself in making products that are dependable with a zero failure rate by following national and international safety and quality production guidelines. As part of its future vision, this knowledge-based manufacturer is planning on expanding its product portfolio. It also wants to increase its export reach. Among its staff, it employs experienced engineers and researchers at its R&D department.
This is the beating heart of the company, and it's home to the quality control unit as well. This company has overcome many challenges over the years to be able to appreciate its achievements. One such hurdle has been the U.S.-imposed economic sanctions. We tend to take electricity for granted until the light goes out. For most of us, we just endure until the power comes back on. But for refineries, there are more serious consequences when the power is lost. In general, power disruptions in refineries happen more frequently than you might think. And when they do, there are mitigation technologies available for minimizing unplanned shutdowns. Power cuts can be extremely costly to a refinery. It can damage machines and equipment, not to mention that a shutdown also means less daily production and slashing profits. The company we mentioned earlier in the program is one of several knowledge-based firms in the country that provide advanced industrial-grade technologies to refineries. Previously, this technology was imported, but now it's domestically manufactured. However, this is only one example of technology that has been indigenized to further develop the gas and oil sectors. Unlike many other industries, the hydrocarbon sector has been slow to adopt technological innovations. It is partly because this sector has done so well that perhaps the drive to improve and innovate simply wasn't there. This changed after reimposing the US-led sanctions on Iran. Iran's refineries are long overdue for a technological upgrade. Luckily, for companies in the fossil fuel industry, there are lots of opportunities popping up for them to revamp operations and propel them into the modern-day playing field. For example, some companies have incorporated innovations in robotics to help get the job done. An integral part of the drilling process in oil extraction is connecting and disconnecting drill pipes. Previously, the process of connecting and disconnecting drill pipes was extremely dangerous for those who did it. Consequently, robotics has made a lot of boring and dangerous elements of drilling safer.
The Iranian oil and gas sector has been taking off at a rapid pace. That's all despite external challenges like the coronavirus pandemic and the U.S. sanctions. The country is passing new milestones in this industry every day. Meanwhile, the government has implemented several policies and initiatives to support technological development for this industry.
The oil industry is an area with outstanding performance over the years, and many measures have led to high levels of self-reliance in all parts of this sector so far. Much of the success is attributed to the hard work of knowledge-based companies in developing technologies to sustain the industry. The capabilities of knowledge-based companies play a significant role in keeping the industry current with the times. The oil ministry says these companies are helping enhance the production of 700 oil and gas wells in the country. Figures from the ministry show Iran has more than 5,500 oil and gas wells in 400 fields nationwide. The ministry plans to use the power of research and knowledge-based companies to increase annual production with the least capital and risk. The goal is to turn existing sources, namely raw material, into wealth. So, for this to happen, the industry must start using science and technology. If the last 40,000 years have been a methodical climb for information and communication technology, or ICT, then the last 30 years have been a sprint. ICT is the world's fastest-growing economic activity. The sector has turned the globe into an increasingly interconnected network of individuals, firms, schools, and governments. They all communicate and interact with each other through a variety of channels, providing economic opportunities transcending borders, languages, and cultures. ICT forms the basis for most advances in almost all aspects of our modern world, including manufacturing technologies. It is considered to be key for advanced manufacturing strategy.
In this show, we will look at Iran's information and communication technology sector. Products of this industry are all around us, which have helped us perform many of our daily tasks more efficiently while saving valuable time. We wanted to explore its role in economic growth and discover how its products are facilitating a shift towards a knowledge-based economy. Our journey this time took us to a company that originated in the capital city of Tehran and now provides services across the country. iToll was established a couple of years ago and has since rapidly expanded its scope of services. It has developed an online platform that consolidates multiple vendors to provide services needed by vehicle owners. In the past, car owners had to physically go to various administrations to change license plates, get insurance, or pay fines. Each one of these tasks required going to a different service provider and often involved lengthy waits and lots of bureaucracy. This company reimagined the way people take care of their vehicle needs. Now, all these tasks are easier to complete with the use of a single website. For example, one particular service which is quite handy for car owners is the impound release service. Getting your car back from impoundment isn't fun. You will often need to gather lots of paperwork and pay some hefty fees. But probably the most difficult step is locating the vehicle itself. This is actually more difficult than one might think. This company offers a unique service for a situation like this. After the car owner enters the basic vehicle information on the website, they have the option to hire an agent. Upon receiving express permission from the car owner, the agent then will carry out all tasks of getting the car back from impoundment. The age of digital technology has brought everything to our fingertips. Such technology has saved us valuable resources and numerous headaches. It has helped us become more productive with the efficient use of our time, freeing up busy schedules for other activities. ICT has also opened new channels for service delivery in areas such as e-government, education, e-health, and information distribution. There are several websites and places where an individual can search to find that perfect car to buy. Not to mention there are numerous areas to shop around for vehicle insurance, but never before have they been found in one place. So one of the competitive advantages of this business is its expansive range of services offered through a single platform. Being resilient and adaptable has been key to managing the fallout of the COVID-19 crisis. During the coronavirus pandemic, more and more people turned to the internet to meet their vehicle needs as many areas began restricting in-person services. This company offered a valuable service during that period, and currently, its platform has around 20 million users. The services provided by this platform are certified through various government departments and municipalities. And as such, this company is regulated by these entities as well. It has also received its operation permits from the Center for Information Technology and Digital Media under the Ministry of Culture and Labor. As part of its future vision, this business is planning to increase its services with its development strategy. The biggest asset of this company is its human resources, which employs specialist and experienced personnel in the field of information and communication technology. Plus, it has dozens of expert consultants for various fieldwork tasks. Currently, roughly 80 people work at its company. The company we just mentioned is only a small part of the massive information communication technology network in Iran. This sector is increasingly viewed as a resource to improve productivity and efficiency, leading to economic growth. The Iranian economy has benefited greatly from ICT application over the years. Now, you might be wondering what these technologies are and what they do. In a nutshell, these technologies all deal with the transmission or reception of information of some kind.
It's a blanket term that broadly covers tech and services involved in computing, data management, telecommunications provision, and of course, the internet. Some of these technologies are software that is used in factories to manage productions. In fact, ICT plays a vital role in manufacturing industry's competence, competitiveness, and production processes. Still, other ICT examples can be hardware and necessary infrastructure product like fiber optic cables and the like. The government began privatizing this sector in the 1990s. Presently, most of the sector is privatized by operators competing in the mobile telephone, data services, and internet sectors. In 2013, the share of ICT in the economy was roughly 1.5%. Since then, policymakers have been keen on developing the sector by targeting ICT infrastructure in the 7th development plan ending in 2025. Included in the future plan are increasing household broadband internet access, especially in rural areas, and delivery of all government services through e-government.
ICT has many uses, but probably the biggest use is to facilitate internet flow nationwide. Internet is one of the easiest ways to transmit information, whether it is through e-commerce, creating platforms to increase access to services, and so much more. During the coronavirus pandemic, many processes, including education, were made easier by using the internet.
According to statistics from the National Communications Regulation Organization, currently, there are somewhere around 80 million internet subscribers in the country. This roughly breaks down to 70 million mobile subscriptions, while 9 million use broadband connections. The users of fixed broadband are mainly businesses and government entities. We have studied a report released in 2019 by the E-commerce Development Center of Iran to get more insight. Figures showed there were some 270,000 e-commerce businesses in the country. Statistics in the report also indicated that 13% of these businesses were owned by women nationwide. The center puts the total transactions from e-commerce businesses alone at around $1 billion in 2019.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague who has prepared an interesting feature for you.
Where is it? I've been searching for project records, like for hours, and I can't find them. Oh, Jesus, I've got a pile of files. My boss just sent me some files, you know, here in my system. Then he sent me some messages here. It's an absolute mishmash. I cannot find anything. What should I do? I wish there was a sort of tool so that could help me do things easier or a little bit more organized. Is there anything like that? Well, yes, there is. Today, we want to visit a company which has used modern technology and knowledge to find a solution for my problem. So let's dive in and find out more. Necessity is mother of all inventions. Why I'm saying this? Well, this company has clearly understood this statement. They have noticed the lack of interaction in Iranian organizations and companies in workplace. So what did they do? They just developed a sort of software which increases inner organization interactions and cooperation. This would lead to higher productivity as it gives managers more executive power so that they can have a better supervision over their employees and their performance, such as the tasks they have assigned to them and projects. Well, thing is an absolute beauty. You might ask, what does it do? Well, everything. It prioritizes all tasks and projects based on the level of importance and deadlines. They have also added a sort of AI to it lately, which helps the company just, you know, to improve this feature. Okay, what can employees do there? They can interact, cooperate, and talk about projects in that environment. Also, we have another feature, which is files. We have, you know, everything is recorded there. You know, anything related to the project is recorded there. All the files, all the information in a very, very organized fashion. So the other thing that we have is the history, which I actually gave you a brief explanation about.
This company has bigger dreams, and that is attracting foreign investors. So they have done their best to create a high-quality product that can compete with similar ones within the global market. They are currently negotiating with two European companies that have chosen them because of their high quality and reasonable price.
The coronavirus pandemic is a health crisis which has impacted our lives in each and every way, especially the lockdowns and restrictions. It has been a big blow to companies and businesses around the world. So in order to reverse this, remote working seemed to be the best option. Employees initially struggled to adapt to this new change, but later they said it's more comfortable and that they are working more efficiently. But this is a concern for managers. They're not sure about this. They believe that working from home would impact the employee's performance. So there is a need for a kind of system, a tool or something that can ensure managers about the level of productivity and efficiency. And this company has came up with an idea, a brilliant one, which ensures that.
There is so much more to cover when it comes to industry development through knowledge-based companies. So let's take a quick look at some news and trends in this field. As we mentioned earlier in the program, UPS systems are vital to industrial towns. But when power outages are so frequent, how do industrial towns cope with the expensive outages?
One such place is Khuzestan province. Power outages in and around the provincial capital Ahvaz were a near-permanent feature for many years. To help stabilize the power supply in the region, two substations were launched and synchronized with the national power grid. The project was worth $30 million and aims to help prevent adverse impacts of voltage fluctuations in industrial towns.
Iran's oil ministry has created a tech park intending to develop the technology needed in the oil industry.
This tech park has already tapped into the potentials of the knowledge-based ecosystem to use the latest technology in this field. The oil park is located in Tehran and has inked four collaboration agreements with domestic tech firms. In partnership with the National Innovation Fund, the deals will provide financing, market expansion, and support to both fledgling and developed tech firms in the field.
And our last bit of news, the construction of a huge steam turbine has placed Iran among the world's top five manufacturers.
The first domestically made steam turbine rotor was unveiled and installed in a power plant last year in the city of Tehran. It was designed and engineered by Iran Power Plant Repairs Company and has saved the country over $13 million in imports. One of its features is it can help reduce air pollution by using hydrogen as an alternate fuel source. It is said the production costs are around $8 billion, which is much less than the $22 million it takes to import the item.
That wraps up our program for today. Drop us a line through our email with your thoughts and comments. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today, throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zayed Al-Salami.
A few years ago I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We're talking about the importance of money and wealth, and we are reminding ourselves that our religion, Islam, in it being so in line with our nature, so accommodating to our instinct, so much facilitating for what we want as human beings, we understand that if God has given us all of these wealth and all of these pleasures in this world, then why aren't we using it? Why is it being condemned? The answer is no. Islam as a religion does not condemn you buying things or living comfortably or going after money and wealth and things like that. Absolutely not. Bilax, it's rather the opposite. We really, really need, as a Muslim community, we really need rich people. We really need individuals who are able themselves to not only prove how successful a religious Muslim can be, but also at the same time how Islam can be honored by it being self-sufficient, by it being financially supported. You know, and we really do have many wealthy religious Muslims out there who, alhamdulillah, may be doing what they are able to as far as supporting the community in masajid, in husayniyat, in charity work, in things like that, which is a very, very good thing, a very honorable thing. And so if they didn't have that money, we would indeed, as a Muslim community, we would be crippled. We wouldn't be able to have that sense of independence as well. You know, we don't need to ask for government funds or things like that if us Muslims ourselves are able to sustain these things on our own financially. Of course, you do know that when, you know, there are foreign funds coming from outside of the Muslim community, they might not put down conditions, but they might have certain expectations, and you might have to feel some moral obligation as well. And that doesn't really fall in line with how we need to be as Muslims in that, keeping that sense of istiqlaliyah, of independence. And I think that's an important point for us to always keep in mind. So there really is a virtue in being able to have money and also do what you are able to support the community. This verse that I had mentioned in the previous episode in Surah Al-Qasas, verse number 77, where God says, "And don't forget your portion in this dunya, wa ahsin, and be good, be benevolent, be kind, be generous, kama ahsan Allahu ilayk, as God has been generous to you." Where did you get this money from? Where did you get this wealth from? You got it from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So what are you doing in return to show your appreciation to God?
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Another verse in the Holy Quran, we know this verse very well because we probably read it in our qunut, or we've probably heard it before, but let's read this ayah within this context of what we are talking about. Rabbana atina fil dunya hasana wa fil akhirati hasana wa qina adhaban nar. When you say Rabbana atina fil dunya hasana, what does that mean? Surah Al-Baqarah, verse number 201. It means that you want goodness, you want kindness, you want benevolence, you want that which is going to make your life pleasant in this dunya, and also you're not forgetting al-akhirah as well. Imam Ali, salamullahi alayhi, he says, أَفْضَلُ mal ma وُقِيَ bihi al-'ird وَقُضِيَتْ bihi al-huquq. The best money is the money that will protect your family and what you would be able to use to fulfill the rights of others. And this is again something that we need to remember, where how are we able to protect? How are we able to preserve? The most important thing is economizing, having good financing skills. And this is really, really something that we fall very short of. You receive this much money, you have zero financial planning. You spend what you have. And there's a very famous kind of Arabic saying, and I've heard this from my father a few times. He says, "Usruf ma fil jayb," spend whatever you have in your pocket. يَأْتِيكَ مَا فِي الْغَيْبِ, and that, and the unseen, that which is in the unseen, will come to you. So you spend what you have, and then all of a sudden you're going to expect some money coming up and popping up for you. That's the very wrong way of financing, and it's not really going to get you anywhere. You know, and again, we need to remember that it all comes down to skills. How are you able to learn about money and about managing your money? And there are many riwayats from Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam that speak about that. And that's also something that we need to look into. You know, what do our imams alayhi wasalam have to say about economizing, about your financial planning? You know, do you have special savings for your future? Do you have special savings for emergency? Do you have special savings for Hajj? Do you have special savings for ziyarah? Do you have special savings for your children's marriage? What are you doing as far as these things are concerned? You know, is it bad to save money? Absolutely not. Someone might say, well, if it's not bad to save money, then why did Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam say, "Ma jumi'a malun illa min bukhlin aw haram"? Why, the only way that money can be accumulated is through stinginess and through haram. Yes, that's true. That someone who likes to accumulate money and do no wajib towards it and have no kind of generosity in giving it out in the wajib or in the mustahab way, that is going to be a very, very big burden for them. Yes, but if you're doing your wajib, this is the most, I can say, it's the most unpracticed area. Why? Because it has to do with money. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.